Jackson to the end zone. Touchdown, Texas Tech.
Ezukama for the touchdown.
Hand off to Marcus Fields. Down the sideline. Touchdown, Red Raiders.
Welcome one, welcome all to the Air Raid Podcast. Presented by you, the Matadors. You are on, as always, with your boy, Albie Shore. And I got my right-hand man, Dylan Smythe, with me. What's up, Dylan?
Oh, man. I am so excited to do a podcast now that we've won a football game. This is not a drill, everybody. Texas Tech has won a football game.
Won a game, and it feels so good. That is right. Jeremy Gillen is on the podcast with us as well. Jeremy, how are you feeling on Victory Monday?
It is Dub City in Lubbock. There's no greater feeling than running around and jumping for joy, beating a 1-5 Baylor team. It's been a good weekend. Oh, I also got my toilet paper. I am ready for another shutdown. I'm telling you, this has been a successful weekend for me in general.
Hey, Jeremy, a dub is a dub. It doesn't matter who you're playing, okay? Right?
Hey.
You were saying pre-pod, people were coming up to you talking about how impressive this performance was. Why? Because we got a W, and that means those people did not watch the game because it was not an impressive performance whatsoever, but we got the W. Dylan, what to make of this performance that you saw on Saturday?
I think you guys are tearing down the win a little bit here. I think it wasn't necessarily impressive, but it was much needed, and I think you could speak a lot to the defense's performance in this game. I mean, holding Baylor to what they did with the offense, essentially handing them 9 points. Really impressed with the defense and then impressed with the team and whole to close it out. But I was just excited to see the guys get a win in the butt bowl.
Good old butt bowl. You bring up a good point, because I always find it funny when the Tech defenses, and this has been the case for over the years, when Tech defense plays well, the commentators that don't watch Tech usually are like, oh man, who knew? Tech's defense, not too shabby. Jeremy, what'd you think of the game?
Man, this is Jonathan Garibay's world, and we are all living in it. I love the decision to switch up the kickers from a guy who never even punted before to punting over 50 yards in each of his punts, to hitting the game-winning field goal. Absolute moxie from this guy, and I'm just excited for the cult around Garibay to grow to whatever extent that's going to be.
So what's funny is earlier in the week, it was announced that Trey Wolf was benched. And I put out a joke tweet saying, yeah, that'll fix it. And it did.
And plot twist.
It did. Who knew? It did, actually. So, point one for Wells. Point 532 for me. this game was so – it was frustrating, yet there were really bad coaching and really good coaching at the same time in this game. This game really made you want to pull your hair out while also giving congratulatory messages to the team. Like, it was a lot of weird things, and it's what you expect from a 1-4 team going up against a 2-5. What was it? 1-4 versus 2-5 at the time. That's what you expect, right? I called it during the game, arguably the worst Big 12 game of the year so far. It was not a very well played game by either team. But Dylan, you bring up a great point. A win was a win. The team, the defense especially, played well enough to win. And the offense came through when it mattered. So let's talk a little bit about the offense. Coach Wells decided to go with two quarterbacks. And in this, Henry Columbia started. Alan Bowman came in and immediately was taken away before it was time to take away Columbia. Then Bowman went back in. It was a whole smorgasbord of things happening on the quarterback position. Jeremy, talk to us a little bit about what you thought of the two quarterback system.
I hate it. I hate it so much. for a number of reasons that we've already talked about. It was concerning in this game to pull somebody who was straight off the bench into a game. Alan Bowman, early on, one of his first possessions. Was it his first possession? He threw that pick six.
It was his very first throw.
Yeah.
It was the third drive of the game. He had handed the ball off twice. It was third down, his very first throw of the game. Pick six.
And I thought, well, that is why you don't just reintroduce a quarterback into a system after being on the bench for so many weeks. It just was, it was a disaster, but it worked itself out, but I'm still not comfortable with it. And we can get into the whole Bowman Columbia issue here in a second, but I just didn't like the move. The coaching decision felt pretty reckless with the, you know, like, you have to win this game because it's a 1-5 Baylor team. You're at home. You've been losing so many times. Like, why would you make the decision to, like, do this weird? Well, let's kind of see how each are feeling it out. I know that they are very similar with what they had this season, but you have got to be full and confident on one guy or another. And so this actually presents more of a problem going towards Oklahoma State.
So you actually brought up a good point. So that first interception, that pick six, is that a lot of people are blaming Bowman for it and saying this is why, you know, this is why he got benched in the first place, yada, yada. Do you blame that on Bowman or the coaching staff?
Yeah, I must say coaching staff. I mean, in the immediate, I thought, like, dang, what a crappy read. But at the same time, this is a guy who's coming off the bench, and it's his first pass of the game. And, you know, he's just trying to get it. He's trying to make it work. And I think that is, while it can be placed on him, it's got to be a coaching decision. Like, you don't want to put that guy in the situation to make a mistake. You want to...
I think if you're a defensive coordinator and you had your life depended on it and you had to guess what David Yost was going to call, it's going to be a bubble screen. And sure enough, that's exactly what it was. So it was like,
well, not only
the
that.
Call kind of set him up for it. It was a telegraphed pass. He shouldn't have thrown it, but, like, come on, guys, help the dude out.
Not only that, but he also, I mean, it's Bowman's first throw and he stares the receiver down, which, I mean, Bowman has been prone to do.
Yeah.
Stares the receiver down and floats one up there. Wasn't a very strong pass because it's a guy that hasn't thrown in a competitive game in 4 weeks, right? So, I agree with both of you that it was definitely a Bowman decision there. Now, I will say, in this, though, we got to talk about that. If Bowman doesn't come in the third quarter, the game, this is a loss. So, as much as we want to crap him for the two-quarterback system, I mean, it kind of worked, right? I mean, Dylan, what do you think?
No, it didn't work because when they both had both quarterbacks available to them, they called the game the exact same way, regardless of who was playing quarterback. And then all of a sudden, Henry Columbia went down. We're down 12-23 heading into the fourth quarter. And they're like, man, we should really throw the deep ball once or twice just to see what happens. And that's Alan Bowman territory. So, yeah, I don't think Henry Columbia could have made that comeback drive or made the comeback like Alan Bowman did. I think the two QB system was a failure, and we should really roll with one, and that one should be Alan Bowman.
Oh, all right, we're going to get into that conversation a little bit later, but that's a little insight to it. Actually, screw it. Let's get into it now. Wow, that's actually, you think Alan Bowman should be the quarterback going forward. Jeremy, do you agree?
I have a really hard time with this. I think Dylan brought up a good point that, you know, we saw two different quarterbacks, but the same system. So it felt like Yost and Wells were trying to see who's going to work, make their system work the best, rather than adjusting their system towards the quarterback's strengths. They're like, we're going to beat you into submission into our system. And that's something that Columbia, I think Bowman, part of the reason that he may have been not at fault on that, on the bubble screen interception, is that, like, Bowman is a better mid to deep passer than he is a short passer because he telegraphs. If he's telegraphing, you know, TJ Vasher, it's almost a non-issue because Vasher is a 6'6 dude with an insane reach and athleticism. Like, that's not a problem. Or Ezukama. Like, you could telegraph Ezukama, he's already gone. But you can't, it doesn't matter who do you have on the end of a bubble screen, a defensive back with any sense at all can pick that off or make it a disruptive play. So there's two ways we can take this. And if we believe for 1 second that Yost has learned anything from yesterday's game, which we should not, it's that downfield passing works. The only reason that we made a successful run there in the fourth was because we passed downfield a lot more with Bowman. And Bowman can make those plays work. He definitely, you know, for all the ups and downs he's had over the course of these years, like, he is a fighter. Like, he continues to fight. Even if he's losing, he will continue to fight. And that's something I've appreciated all throughout this tenure. But the thing is like, and if we're not going to continue to pass downfield, Bowman is not going to be able to show us the better arm talent that he has. And in that scenario, you need Henry Columbia because Columbia has made stuff happen with his legs. So it really depends on where Yost takes this playbook.
Jeremy is the king of spending 3 minutes to say... Nothing.
What do you mean nothing?
How are you going to go?
How'd you get nothing out of that?
I asked you to go forward with, and you spent most of the time talking about why it's Bowman, and then at the end you were like, but Colombi could work too.
I am just helping you see the wider picture here.
So I will say this. I don't think the two quarterback system work. I was just kind of trying to make conversation earlier. Yeah, it didn't work, but I do think that they're going to start doing this thing where they just go with the hot hand and whoever's hot is hot, right? Because we can't always go back and forth and say that one, because we have kind of fallen into this thing as Tech fans of, oh, well, Bowman sucks, put Colombi in. Oh, Colombi sucks, put Bowman in. And I think the coaching staff's kind of doing the same thing, which is not a great thing to do. You got to pick your guy and rock with it. And no matter what, if you're going to bench Colombi. Colombi's the longer the guy, right? And have Bowman in there as a full-time guy. And if you're going to bench Bowman. Now I think you're basically going to be in a situation this whole next week, I almost guarantee you, both guys are going to get runs with the ones. Somebody's going to start, and the second they struggle, they're going to get pulled. You know what happens? You now go from having two decent quarterbacks to zero decent quarterbacks, because they both know the second they throw an interception, the second they have a fumble, because both guys got pulled after a turnover. The second that happens, they're out of this. So what's going to happen? More turnovers. I don't really know who the better leader for this team is. We talked about it last week that they both have the same stats. And yes, Bowman looked better in this last game, but he's also looked a lot worse in other games. So
I think the argument for playing Henry Colombi is his mobility, right?
Yep.
The fact that our offensive line is so bad, you need someone with mobility. Henry Colombi takes more sacks, considerably more sacks than Alan Bowman. That's kind of my issue with this argument is, like, we want to play this guy because of his mobility, yet he takes more sacks than the guy who's not labeled as not mobile.
Yeah, and I mean, Bowman throws the ball away more, and that's the main thing is, like, and Colombi doesn't at all. Like, that's really the difference. Like, I think Colombi right now has 12 sacks, and you could convert that to 20 throwaways for Alan Bowman. But I will say, in this game, Bowman had a lot more, had probably better escapability than I've seen him have in two years, and maybe that was kind of what he took away from his benching. Was I can't just throw it away. I got to actually move in the pocket. I got to actually escape some of these. And he did a really good job of that in the fourth quarter.
It's also probably the healthiest Alan Bowman we've seen in a long time.
That's true.
Very true. That's a good point. So let's talk a little bit about the offense. So other than the whole quarterback situation, who else really shined in this game for you, Dylan? Who was the guy that really helped Columbia?
I mean, Taj Brooks gets an honorable mention here, but I'm going to take the cheap answer and say Jonathan Garibay. I mean, the guy led the team in scoring. I mean, a 48-yard field goal, 28-yard field goal, and then 46-yard field goal, and then the one to win the game. I mean, how can you not talk about Jonathan Garibay? A, scored the most points of anyone on the team, but also stepped in and punted as well. I think he averaged 50 yards a punt for a guy who's never punted in college. Jonathan Garibay.
That's fair. That's a nice little loophole there. Well, Jeremy, you got to pick somebody else. Give me somebody on offense.
On offense? Just one?
Just
one. Let me tell you, I was surprised with TJ Vasher's only two receptions this game, but boy, they were massive receptions
really,
help out Bowman. Really only one massive one. But like these are, you know, this is somebody that we need in the lineup to do his job at 6'6". You've got to be out there, and you've got to be catching. You got to be an option every play. So I'm happy to see him make a catch in the two catches on the stat sheet, but really a catch to really help us there in that drive. So I can't say anybody else. So TJ Vasher.
Well, I'm a
terrible pick. Free TJ Vasher, yeah. Texas Tech coaching staff. I know you're listening.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. I agree with Dylan. I don't know what you're talking about. TJ Vasher barely played in this game. He had one catch. I had no love for my boy Kashawn Carter, who finally makes an appearance after being hurt for the past month. Kashawn Carter, I think, was a big reason why Alan Bowman was so comfortable in the fourth quarter. Alan Bowman targeted
Eric Ezukama.
He was another guy that really didn't do anything. He wasn't targeted until the third quarter. I had that one big reception from Bowman in the fourth quarter, but that was about it. He really didn't get much going. Kashawn Carter was kind of I could be wrong. Let me know if I'm wrong here. I believe he was the guy that Bowman was staring down in that pick six, but there was definitely a Bowman to Carter connection, right? We saw it earlier in the year when Carter was really racking up all the yards. We see it in this game. Carter really helped Bowman out. That should have been a touchdown in the third quarter that really led to comeback. where he rose up, grabbed it, and basically was right there for that to get to the 1 yard line. I thought Keshawn Carter to me was just as important, just as helpful in the comeback as Alan Bowman. An argument that I think he may have even been more important for the comeback than Alan Bowman, because without Keshawn Carter, I don't think Bowman has that confidence. So let's talk a little bit. Let's switch gears, because let's talk about the true heroes of the game on Saturday. That's the defense. We don't say that too often. And every year, I feel like there's one game where the defense decides we're no longer going to be Texas Tech of old. We're going to show out. We're going to show them how good this defense is. One example was the TCU game in TCU that went to triple overtime years ago, where Pat Mahomes just had a terrible game, but the defense bailed him out. This is that game of the year where the defense truly showed up, not just on the points, but also in the stat sheet. And I would like to ask y'all your player of the game, but let's just talk about Colin Schooler for the next 5 minutes, shall we? Colin Schooler,
shall we?
Colin Schooler was absolutely fantastic. Dylan, what'd you think about him?
I was going to say, there's one of two answers for player of the game on defense, and Colin Schooler, oh my goodness. I mean, he led the team in tackles for loss, tied for sacks in this game, and then had the one hit where he just erased Charlie Brewer from existence. It was almost too good. They didn't score a point after he had, it was a 4-point tackle is what Matt Wells said, because they were going to score a touchdown and he stopped that. They only scored 3, and that ended up being big time, and they didn't score once after that possession.
I don't like being hyperbolic, but that play saved the game. I think if Charlie Brewer
he doesn't make that play, they score a touchdown and we lose that game.
Yeah, I think that totally changed the entire trajectory of the game. After that tackle, you know, there's always those plays where the whole team rises up, the whole team knows what it is. That play changed everything. And mind you, next play, it was 4th and 1. They were going to go for it. False start Baylor. Ended up having to kick a field goal. And that, like you said, a 4-point play. Jeremy, what did you think about Colin Schooler in this game?
I mean, you guys have talked about pretty much all of it. I think something that we have seen a little bit more is just him advancing in this defensive scheme, in this program, just getting better every game. And this game was just an absolute monstrous game. In the post-game presser, I think the one thing that impressed me the most is that I don't think we realize how intelligent he was in that moment. When they asked him about it, he said that really what he first of all, digested what was going on. It's like, this is how I was playing out. This is what was going on. The tight end made a move across for me. And he said, I don't think that he knew where I was, but I knew that Charlie Brewer was basically coming up to me. And he had two choices. The tight end could be his lead into the end zone, or he can try to take me head on. So what he did, what Schooler did, is grab the tight end, pushed him, to force Brewer to come at Schooler. And then I made that point. Schooler knew that, okay, it's me versus this little dude. And we saw what happened. So Schooler has got this, I mean, the reality is he's got this like next level intellect about how he's playing the game. And we really got to see that on display. Somebody tweeted it. I mean, like the NFL tape for that guy, just run that play back, you know? I mean, there's just a lot of intelligence, a lot of physical fortitude. I think this was it's just an amazing game. And the announcers had a field day with it too.
Hello, I'm somebody. I was the one tweeting. I do agree. It was all over ESPN. It was all over Bleacher Report. Everybody loved that tackle. And it wasn't just a tackle, like y'all both stated out. He had an absolutely incredible game. Game of the year for him, for sure. And then there were other, I mean, but I'll say on defense, there were other guys that came in. The three names I'm going to bring up that really had great games in this one: Eric Monroe, Rico Jeffers, and then Zach McPherson. Zach McPherson, I said in the preview that him or DeMarcus Fields was going to have an interception in this game. Zach McPherson came through. Zach McPherson with a couple really big tackles to prevent long gains. And then the game-saving deflection in the fourth quarter that got Tech the ball back.
Oh, my gosh.
Where he just,
yes,
he extended. And he basically was an all-or-nothing play. I mean, he extended. If he misses, that's a touchdown Baylor. Instead, he got the play. Jeremy, what do you think about those three guys?
McPherson, I've said that at the beginning, like, he is going to have to be our leader in the defensive back squad. All kudos to Eric Monroe. We've dunked on him early because, LSU guy coming over here. But really, he played well this game. He had great awareness on the field to really shut down Brewer's options. And, yeah, the receivers are trash anyways. But making it that much harder for Brewer McPherson, of course, amazing. Who else you say? Rico Jeffers?
Rico Jeffers. Rico in this game had a sack. He was in Brewer's face a few times. And then also had really key tackles in this game. I thought Rico played one of his better games as well.
Yeah, Rico Jeffers is certainly one of those linebackers that are just kind of stepping into this lineage of Tech linebackers from Dakota Allen to Jordan Brooks. And, like, we wanted Rico Jeffers to step up. This is one of those games where he really stepped up and, like, did his job and did it well. I also want to do one little shout-out for Adam Beck, who did not have a bonehead play this game. That is impressive.
That alone gets you the shout-out. Dylan, what do you think about the defense?
Yeah, like I said earlier, I think they really only gave up the offense gave up 10 of those points for Baylor. So the defense held up really well. Like you said, Eric Monroe finally looked like the player who was like the highly touted safety from LSU, which was nice to see. Zach McPherson, that play couldn't have been timed any better. And then I thought, you know, despite not being able to get a whole lot of pressure, Tony Bradford played really well on the defensive line as well.
Yeah, for sure. And we have to do our weekly episode, Jacob Morgenson shout out. I can't slander that guy anymore. He has done way better than I could have ever imagined him to ever do. He didn't really show up big in the stat sheet, but did a really, really good job of defending the running backs and passing plays. I thought he was incredible. Every single time a running back either missed a running back or a tight end, either dropped the ball, missed the pass, something like that, guess who was there? Zach McPherson.
Yeah, he's right there.
Yeah, he did an absolutely incredible job there. So so one thing I do want, we got to talk about at the end of the game. All right, it was a pretty big controversy outside of the quarterback controversy that happened at the end of the game was Tech down 23-21. And Sirajic Thompson, right, in the game, we haven't really talked about him much, but Sirajic Thompson in the game breaks off a big run. And he's going, and he cuts back. Daylight's there, and he decides to slide. Now, I have heard an argument that there was another tackle coming in, and he slid to not waste any more time. I didn't really understand that argument, but that was one argument that he slid to just make sure. Oh, to slid to make sure he was in the middle of the field, sorry. Slid to make sure he was in the middle of the field. So that's possible as well. But what did y'all think about Sirajic Thompson's decision to slide, whether it was coached to him, whether he decided it because he's a smart player? Dylan, what did you think about it?
Well, so Matt Wells said that they practiced that, and that was the plan. So he was told to do that. And at first, I was like, oh, no, what are you doing, bro? At first, I didn't understand it. And then I started, like, thinking about recent history, and I was like, okay, well, Texas, 3:15 to go. You know, we have to bring that up on every podcast.
3 minutes and 13 seconds.
Yeah, 3 minutes and 13 seconds. Have to bring that up every podcast. And then Baylor, last year we had a similar situation. It's scary to me because you don't have your kicker and you have a backup, essentially a backup kicker who had proved himself up until that point. But man, are you putting a lot on his shoulders in that scenario. And I think that's what scared me the most about it. But in the end, it ended up being the right call. I think there's absolutely reason to worry about giving the Baylor Bears, you know, a minute to come back and win this game. So at first I didn't understand it. The more I thought about it, I was like, you know, it's probably the safe move.
Jeremy, what do you think?
Yeah, Dylan and I are thinking the same here. That Baylor game last year where we went to overtime, I think it was like 1:30 left. We were going down the field pretty well, but then breaks off that 30-yard run for a touchdown. We think like, oh, yeah, it's awesome, woo! And then, you know, Baylor ties it up, and then overtime, double overtime loss, which sucked. And then Texas. And so, you know, in like Sirajic Thompson's mind, like these kind of games are playing back. And I can't remember if it was in the post-game interview that Wells was saying that this is something that they have talked about, not maybe explicitly, but like understanding the game time decision to just get the field goal set up, whatever. And Texas Tech fans are so sometimes ludicrously in the moment mindseted that it's like, why would you just go get a touchdown? Why would you go? It's like, well, you know our defense. Like, you know what can happen. You know what can happen. Why would you suddenly just turn on him when he makes what would end up being? Now, if we miss the field goal, then it's a whole different narrative, right? But we didn't, like, because we had a guy who was consistently knocking him in. And so Wells had confidence in him and said, you know what? I want to end this game right now. I don't want this game to go on the backs of our defense and something happen. And so I think I'm not upset with that at all. I'm not upset with that, and I'm not upset with the trying to go for 2 points earlier in the game. These are 2 points of contention I've heard. We made the smart move there, got the field goal, and won the game. Like, I don't, like, get over it.
The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Okay? Tech fans, the ones that are defending, saying that we should have scored the touchdown, that is we want us to do the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. Last year, as Jeremy pointed out, last year, with 1:30 to go, Sirajic broke off the run to score a touchdown. Game should have been over. Game against Texas, up 15, 3:36 to go. Game should have been over. You want us to score a touchdown, give Baylor the ball back with 1 minute to go, and against prevent Patterson? We've talked about it all year, how Coach Patterson loves playing prevent defense with the game on the line. I get that Baylor's offense hasn't done great this game, but guess when they would have their best drive of the season, of the entire season?
Of the season.
Of the season would be with 1 minute left to go. They would just drive down. To me, it's a no-brainer. And it's not only just – we see it all the time. I mean, heck, just 2 weeks ago, if anybody watched the Vikings and Dalvin Cook, Dalvin Cook tried everything in his power to stop on a dime on the 1 yard line, and he ended up scoring a touchdown, and they lost. Because what ends up happening, the other team with 1 minute or however to go, drives down the field, scores, wins the game. The smart move in this scenario, I thought immediately it was a brilliant move by Sirajic Thompson. Because I've just seen it happen so often where you score too early, other team gets the ball. And the idea to me that Tech fans that have seen the defense, has this worst secondary in the Big 12, right, has seen this happen already multiple times in the past 2 years, would actually want us to score in that scenario, him sliding is the best thing ever. I get the trepidation as far as when it comes to our kickers. I get it.
The problem is good teams don't have to worry about this kind of thing, you know, because a good team scores the touchdown. They're like, oh, we got 50 seconds. No problem.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
the reality is.
But that's the thing. The reality is this has happened. And I'll say this. I get the trepidation as far as kickers go. Like, you're not only is it a college kicker, but recently we've had really just bad luck with kickers, right? But here's the thing. It's within 10 yards. It was a 25-yard field goal. There are more difficult field goals contested whenever you're trying to win a free rent at halftime than what Jonathan Garibay had to go through. All three of his first three field goals were tougher than what he had to go through. At that point, I get the pressure and I get all that. But at that point, if he misses the field goal, I'm not blaming the coaching staff. You blame the kicker. Right. Whenever a few years ago against Oklahoma State, when Tech was pulling the upset and we were 1 point away from going to overtime and the kicker missed, did anybody go and say, oh, man, Coach Kingsbury, bad decision to kick that extra point? No, we said the kicker messed up. And that's what happens. You made the good coaching decision and you put the ball in the defense in your kicker's hands. You make the best decision there is possible. You put the ball in the kicker's hands and see what happens. But giving it back to the defense is already giving up touchdown after touchdown, game-losing result after game-losing result. Why would you continue to do that? Why would you still say, you know what? I trust them to do it again. Right? Like, it just makes no sense. I thought, and I joked about it pre-pod, but I don't know how much I'm joking. That might have been the best coaching decision he's made in the 2 years he's been here. It was the Sirajic Thompson slide. Absolutely brilliant decision. And I think Tech fans griping about it, I'll put it like this. We've talked about three different games. We didn't even talk about the Kansas State game. We were up in the fourth quarter and Prevent Patterson took over. Let him score 2 touchdowns towards the end of the game, right? We have seen one thing that didn't work, and now we see one thing that did work. And if you're griping and you wanted the thing that didn't work, I don't know what else to say to you, okay? One thing is smart. The other thing is just not. Good job, Coach Wells. I don't get to say it very often, but good job. So there was only one other game that happened in the Big 12 this weekend, guys. The only one. So, don't want to talk about it?
Really, not much to talk about. West Virginia was awful. I mean, not West Virginia.
Not West Virginia.
TCU was awful.
Max Duggan and those throws,
6 points,
baby.
2 field goals. Max Duggan couldn't hit a pass to save his life. Letty Brown ran rampant all over them. Dagey looked really good, really efficient in this game. Yeah, West Virginia's defense was just too much for nothing on offense for TCU.
Jeremy, actually, you go. What did you think of the game?
What else can you say? The prodigal son of Lubbock, Jared Dagey, doing the Dagey thing.
Now he's the prodigal son of Lubbock. Okay. I'll say this. I tweeted this. Macon called Duggan trash about 2 weeks ago, and TCU Twitter came all up on him. And since then, Duggan has been awful. Duggan's been absolutely awful. In the game against us, he couldn't throw to save his life. He had to run. And this game, he couldn't do either. He was just bad. And the worst thing about this is if you had not seen anything of the Big 12 before, and you just watched that TCU-West Virginia game, and I told you that Texas Tech lost to TCU but beat West Virginia, you'd be shocked. Okay? You'd be absolutely shocked. And actually, neither game was really that close. You'd be absolutely shocked. But West Virginia, once again, showing that they are – I still think West Virginia is one of the better teams in the Big 12, and TCU proving that they are one of the – they are. If this was – if Tech Baylor was a battle for eighth place, this was probably the battle for fifth or sixth place, and TCU, I think, is firmly in the seventh or sixth or seventh region and not as good as West Virginia. So
how am I just realizing that West Virginia has a kicker with the last name Leg? That's incredible.
Fantastic, man.
Casey Leg.
Well, Big 12 Twitter did find out that Mason McCourse is on the Texas Tech team. So
I didn't even know we had a McCourse.
Yep. Tech's always good for wonderful names. Like that's mm-hmm. that's a given. Right, I'm pretty sure we recruit.
That's our thing.
Yeah, we recruit specifically for it. So, last thing you want to say, Jeremy?
Yeah. In the postgame presser, I'll let people digest this how they want to, but I wrote it down here that Matt Wells asked about the win over Baylor. Just generally, he said, "I'll say this: it's the biggest win of the year. I know that we needed it. Our players needed it. Our coaches needed it. They're a bunch of fighters, and we will continue to stick together."
That is just about the saddest thing I've ever heard in my life. Oh, goodness.
1-5, Baylor.
Dylan, what do you got to say?
Follow the home team at Air Raid Podcast. Bye week next weekend. No preview podcast because there'll be no football game, but we will be talking Texas Tech basketball. Get excited. It's good times ahead.
Yay! Texas Tech basketball. Man, that's sad. I'm still going back to the quote that Jeremy said. That's so
bad. I'm so sorry.
Most important win of the season was over 1-5. But I will say I do get why he says that. You're right. They all did need it desperately, and they were desperate for it with the whole 2QB thing. That's reeks of desperation. But we'll see in 2 weeks whether that. Can rejuvenate this team that we pull off what would be the biggest upset of the Big 12 season? Probably not, but you'll find out what we think in 2 weeks. Like Dylan said, follow the home team at Air Raid Podcast. Leave a review on Apple Pod for every review. Jeremy Gillen Jr. will leave a $5 donation to whatever.
I think it's
$10. Oh, $10. Oh, that's right. $10. It's not $10 donation. To your favorite charity. And it just gets better every week. But who knows? By next week, he may just donate it to you personally. I don't know. Jeremy's a wild boy. For Jeremy, for Dylan, this is Albie. You've been listening to the Air Raid Podcast presented by Viva the Matadors. As always, stay wrecked, people.